Welcome into Monday's edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by a lot of people throughout the show. Sid Lowe will be here, Julien Laurent, Gab Marcotti, Hercules Gomez and Craig Burley. But it's Spain that we start. Interesting stuff from Lionel Messi on Instagram coming out and saying this. We want to clarify that our desire has always been for a reduction to be applied to our salaries because we understand that this is an exceptional situation and we are the first that have always helped the club with what they have asked of us. It surprises us that from inside the club, there would be people that want to put us under a magnifying glass or to try to pressure us into something that we were always clear we wanted to do. In fact, if the agreement has dragged on, it's because we were looking for a formula to help the club and its workers in these difficult times. For our part, the moment has arrived to announce that aside from the 70% wage cut during the state of emergency, we're going to also make contributions so that all the club's employees can earn 100% of their salaries for as long as this situation lasts. Well, Sid Lowe joins us from Spain. Sid, this is another big shot, isn't it, from Lionel Messi against the Barca board?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's very difficult not to imagine Leo Messi lining up for a free kick and absolutely smashing it into the top of the net. Only instead of the ball, it's Bartomeu that he's booted because he really has. He's beaten him again. He's beaten him again in terms of the public perception. I think he's beaten him again in terms of taking the right decisions at the right time, in terms of revealing yet again the extremely broken relationship there is between boardroom and dressing room. I think he's demonstrated again that the players believe that the board are not handling things well, that the players are being left in a position that exposes them unfairly, that they've effectively been blamed for situations and problems that are not of their making. And I think this response from Messi, and indeed, by the way, the other players, because of course this was Messi's statement, which other players have followed in putting on their social media accounts, has left Bartomeu, the president, very, very badly exposed yet again. Obviously, in terms of the fundamentals of this, the most important thing, of course, is that this is an agreement to cut their salary, and not only that, an agreement to ensure a situation in which the employees at the club, who I suppose we could use the speech marks and say the normal employees, the non-footballing staff, none of them will be faced by an economic impact because of this coronavirus crisis.
Now, this all comes off the back of suggestions what the players were dragging their heels about wanting to take a salary cut.
Well, the important thing about this really is that the players had said from the start that they were prepared to listen, that Barcelona were trying to put proposals into place, and then of course what happened was there wasn't an agreement reached. Now, what happened after that is very significant. There wasn't an agreement reached. Some of those stories were filtered into the media, which has clearly annoyed the players. You look at the wording of Messi's statement today. But of course, what then happened was that Barcelona as a club announced that they were going to apply for what's known as an ERTE. Now, an ERTE in Spain allows clubs, in fact, allows all companies to unilaterally impose these kind of pay cuts on their staff, in this case on their players, in the event of a crisis or an objectively difficult situation. So what Barcelona have done is they've said, this is what we're going to do. Now, of course, that's a unilateral measure. And they said it was going to apply to all sporting staff, but also to non-sporting staff. So the players were made to look like, right, we're going to impose this on them. Why? Because they lack the solidarity. They lack the care. They lack the consideration for the rest of the club. And they weren't prepared to make an effort to help the club survive. What the players have done with this is come out and say, not only will we accept this 70% pay cut, not only will we do everything that we can to help the club out, as we have always done, but by the way, we're going to see your 70% and we're going to add on top of that our own contributions to make sure that those staff who you said you were going to apply pay cuts to no longer have those pay cuts. In other words, this first team squad is effectively going to pay the wages of the more than 1,000 people who work for Barcelona.
We, of course, spoke just months ago about Messi taking to social media before to defend the dressing room. Obviously, the falling out with Eric Abidal after the sacking of Valverde. Someone's going to have to fall on their sword here, aren't they, Sid?
It does feel like it, doesn't it, increasingly. Now, look, I suppose on one level, perhaps not, if only because the mechanisms for a president to be pushed out haven't yet been triggered. But the situation, it's very difficult to imagine this situation could be maintained like this. You've got the, not just the club captain, but you've got the most significant player in the entire history of the club very publicly calling out the president again. Now, the president still has another year after this summer before he faces presidential elections, but I think the pressure will build and build now for him to call elections again, in which he would not stand, by the way. The problem is, I guess from Bartomeu's point of view, is that he will not want to go prematurely because he will always be remembered for that. He will want to give himself the chance to be redeemed in some way. And remember, of course, that this is a president who's been through this situation before. Remember, he was on the verge of sacking Luis Enrique in January of his first season. He was in a position where it basically looked like that was it. Luis Enrique was gone. The president was under pressure. The sporting director had gone, which was Andoni Zubizarreta. Andoni Zubizarreta's number two at the time was Carlos Puyol. He left as well. Luis Enrique was hanging on by the skin of his teeth, and it felt like Bartomeu, because of all this crisis, was on his way out as well. He held on. He hung on as tightly as he could. And at the end of the season, Barcelona had won a treble. So I guess what Bartomeu will probably be thinking now was, well, I can't just walk away like this. I have to try and, you know, have that one last Hail Mary and hope that this comes off. But there's no doubt now that he has huge numbers of people lined up against him.
Of course, quickly, amongst all of this, Messi can leave at the end of June as it stands. For free.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, this is part of the problem, is that that is the threat that hangs over them. Messi has said himself, look, I have no intention of going. I don't want to leave. People can be calm about this. They don't need to worry about it. But, and this is the big but that sits there heavily, that lingers over everyone, he says, I want a team that can compete. And of course, what he's effectively saying with that publicly is yet again saying, all right, let's look at the people who are constructing this squad, i.e. the president, who has taken a huge amount of power beyond just what a president normally has, and it's not good enough. And Messi is making that threat yet again, and it's very, very difficult to see how this gets resolved now.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Just a reminder, plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe to ESPN FC. Interesting stuff from Harry Kane talking to Jamie Carragher, coming out and saying, I've always said if I don't feel we're progressing as a team or going in the right direction, then I'm not someone to just stay there for the sake of it. So it's not a definite I'm going to stay there forever, but it's not a no either. And welcome to the show, Craig Burley and Julianne Laurent with us to discuss this. It's interesting, Craig, isn't it? Because Harry Kane has said very little about his future in the past. You feel maybe the last few months has just proved to be a bit of a tipping point.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's an uncertain future for a lot of clubs, but for Tottenham with new management, we know Daniel Levy's been quite strict before with the finances. We know Mourinho will, you know, try and barter to get as much money as possible, but ultimately they have a wage structure there and they have a budget cap like a lot of clubs, and it's nowhere near like some of the other big teams in Europe. So that's going to be an issue. The other side of the coin is here, he's coming off this injury. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of a summer transfer window, if the season will restart. And also, Dan, Harry Kane's going to be 27 in July. That, for me, is the absolute peak of your career. It's decision-making time, because in 3 or 4 years' time down the line, when he's hitting 30, 31, then it might have come and gone for Harry Kane. So at 27 years old, which he will be this summer, this is the crux of when he has to make a big decision. And quite frankly, the only way I see it is Harry Kane's agent makes it known to some of the big clubs around Europe that he is interested in a move.
Jules, how high is Kane's stock regarded by the big clubs around Europe?
In terms of ability, I think it's really high. They don't need to scout him. They've watched him enough through the years. They know, they can see all the records and all the goals he scored and all the figures, all the numbers, all of that. There might be a little question mark over, can he adapt to another league, to living abroad, to a different culture, a different country. We know that sometimes British players are not always the best at adapting to a different environment. So maybe there's a little question mark about that, but I wouldn't have that. I think he would be great in any team in Europe. I think he's a fantastic striker. And he was honest. He was asked the question and he was honest. He could have easily lied and said, I'm happy at Spurs, which he's also said, and I want to win trophies here, which he's also said that. But no, I thought he was honest, and I think it's really good. Let's not forget, though, that his contract, who he renewed in 2018, goes until 2024, and he's on a lot of money, around £200,000 a week. So whoever wants to buy him, and as Craig said, Daniel Levy is a pretty tough businessman to deal with anyway, so whoever would want to buy it have to get ready for a hell of a negotiation and a lot of money as well.
Does he walk into any team, in your opinion, Craig?
No, he doesn't walk into the Bayern Munich team at the moment because Robert Lewandowski is the hottest striker on the planet, although he's a little bit older than Harry Kane. But apart from that, pretty much most of the other teams he does walk into. When you're talking about key players that can change a game, forgetting the two that we talk about all the time, and Ronaldo and Messi, then you're talking about a fit Harry Kane. You're talking about Robert Lewandowski, who I say is the best at the moment. There's no doubt about that for me, as a natural number nine. And then you're looking at Sergio Aguero and one or two others. Look, Harry Kane, I think, Tottenham are a great club, right? They've got a big stadium, a lovely stadium, a new stadium, but they generally don't win things. Harry Kane is on the tip of the tongue, I would imagine, of all the big guns. Barca, Real Madrid, maybe even in Italy, potentially someone else even in England. Who knows? I mean, you know, if you're Man United, would you take Harry Kane over Ighalo? That's not even up for debate. And they have the clout to do so. So clearly, the next 6 months are a huge turning point in Harry Kane's career and potentially in the upcoming seasons for Tottenham, because they're not going to be able to go out and replace him. They'll get the big money for Harry Kane, but they won't go out and spend it all in one player. They've shown that before. So it's a big 3 to 6 months for both the club and the player. But if he's going to make that move, Dan, I think he has to make it sooner rather than later.
And the problem is as well, going back to his quote, you think, well, what are Spurs going to be able to do over the next few months when things start to try and get back to normal to get the big players in that will keep Harry Kane there? Because there's been no real example, as there, Craig, in the past, that they're that sort of team that are going to spend big to keep Kane happy.
No, they spent, they got a fair amount of money for Gareth Bale when he went to Real Madrid, but they went out and sort of threw it about a little bit like confetti, and it didn't generally work for them. The trouble here is, and Tottenham fans, like any fan of a club that could potentially lose their star player, is the domino effect and the snowball effect, where, you know, one goes, you know, we saw it with Pochettino. We wondered when Pochettino eventually left, whether it be his own accord or sacked as he was, how that domino effect would have with other players. Now, at this moment in time, it hasn't really had any. But I think if you do lose your star man, one of Europe's top strikers, then and you've already lost Christian Eriksen to Inter Milan in January, then you start looking about, you know, your future at the club and whether you want to go to that club as a player coming from somewhere else. But it's part and parcel of the business that we're in. He's one of the hottest properties in European football. And I'm afraid Spurs are a big club, but they're not a giant club. And I think that's where he's going to end up, at one of the real big boys.
And you mentioned it before, Jules, obviously, Levy, a very sassy businessman. If you're going to sell Harry Kane, this summer is probably where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck, isn't it?
Yes, probably. Like Craig said, he's 27. He will be 27 in the summer. And this is probably, you would think, the right time to sell him. Although he had a bit of a weird season with all the injuries and the surgery and all of that. So maybe not his most prolific. And also, you could have sort of banked on him having a good Euros to then make his value even higher. And then selling him, there will be no Euros this summer. However, what you don't want to, though, is a clash with Harry Kane. And I don't think Harry Kane will go to the clash anywhere. However, if Harry Kane tells you that he wants to go because he doesn't feel like the club is going into the right direction and he wants to win trophies and this, if you're Daniel Levy, you can't force him to stay. I'm not even sure you can tell him, well, give us another year and then we'll let you go. I think you would have to listen very carefully to what Harry Kane has to tell you.
Well, just a reminder, keep up to date with all the latest news in the transfer market. Go over to our website and click on Transfer Talk.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Now, Jose Mourinho has announced his best 11 that he's ever worked with. Petacek, Zanetti, Terry, Ricardo Carvalho, Gallas, Makélélé, Lampard, Mesut Ozil, Eden Hazard, Didier Drogba and Cristiano Ronaldo make up the starting 11 as we welcome Sid Lowe back into the show. Sid, I know you're frustrated by the lack of Zlatan or indeed Sergio Ramos in this 11.
No, I'm not at all bothered about that. I'm slightly surprised about Zlatan because their relationship was very close. I must admit, there's a little bit of me that always thinks this, that whenever there's an 11 chosen by a manager or a player, there's always this kind of immediate response about who's missing. And so rather than being a celebration of the players that are in this team, because bear in mind, we're talking about a brilliant manager who's managed some brilliant players. And so if you're in this 11, it's like, wow, these are the 11 he's chosen. But we almost always end up focusing on the players who are missing, which I always feel like is a bit of a pity. And we get obsessed with the snub. We get obsessed with the controversy and the confrontation rather than saying, hey, let's celebrate these guys who are in there. And in some cases, it's very interesting. I mean, I, for example, from a Madrid perspective, find it very interesting that Mesut Ozil is in there because we always had the feeling here that he didn't quite find a place for Ozil in the side. He wasn't quite convinced maybe by his work rate, some of those issues that, of course, re-emerged at Arsenal, that he wasn't always sure that Ozil was the player that he wanted him to be. But then, obviously, after all these years, he's gone back and said, OK, yeah, Ozil gets in this team. So I was quite struck by that and quite pleasantly surprised as well. The absence of Ramos, well, given the relationship at Real Madrid, is probably not entirely surprising. The absence of Zlatan, as I say, slightly surprises me. And maybe Cristiano Ronaldo as well, because by the end, the relationship with Ronaldo at Real Madrid wasn't that good. But, of course, you can't overlook Ronaldo's extraordinary performances in that year when Real Madrid scored, I think it was 121 league goals and got more than 100 points.
Eagle-eyed viewers, Sid, are enjoying seeing the collection of books behind you. I noticed that five league titles and a packet of crisps is there.
Yeah, I thought I might start playing with this. So every time I come on the show, there'll be a slightly different collection of books. And I did slightly cheat. I didn't exactly put Steve in very subtly, did I? I was going to just have the spine on. I thought, no, let's make absolutely sure that people have seen this. And that people are aware, by the way, that five league titles and a packet of crisps. I mean, you know, Steve's standard diet is a packet of crisps when it's not a shepherd's pie.
Yep, very much so. Very much so, Sid. I'll be looking forward to playing more book games with you tomorrow, Sid Lowe. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. The things we've been reduced to, eh?
Now, Karim Benzema, maybe a bit bored yesterday, thought he'd do a Q&A on Instagram, was asked about Olivier Giroud. And he said, well, you don't confuse Formula One with karting, and I'm being nice. Next, I know that I'm Formula One. His style of play suits the French national team well. Him up top, he weighs on defences, which allows the two others, Mbappe and Griezmann, to move a lot and show a lot. He blocks and it works. It won't be spectacular. He won't do something amazing, but he has his thing. Obviously, this created headlines. Benzema went on Instagram today to respond to those headlines, saying, I told the truth. Quite simply, what was not picked up was what I said about what he brings to the French national team. If you ask me, in comparison to Ronaldo, Brazilian one, he is Formula One and I'm karting. It is just like that. Good old Instagram Q&As, eh, Jules?
Yeah, that was a pretty eventful Sunday night. I watched the one he did on Saturday, which was quite eventful as well, but not as good as the one on Sunday when, as soon as the name of Giroud came up, I thought, this could be interesting, and I was not disappointed. Listen, no one can argue that Benzema is a more gifted, more talented footballer than Giroud is. And again, I don't think that's the point here. The point is, Karim Benzema, really, does he need to have that kind of playground, primary school banter with Olivier Giroud? They don't even play together in the national team anymore. They used to a few years ago. They didn't really like each other. Benzema never really liked Giroud. They're very extreme in the personalities they have. the way they behave, what they like and where they come from and all that kind of thing. So they never really got on that well, but that's okay. A lot of players don't. But then I don't think Benzema needed to do that on Sunday night. He needed to be that aggressive and that, in a way, it didn't shame him, but it's not nice if you're Giroud listening to that. And by the way, as a lot of people pointed out, there's one who won the World Cup and the other one who didn't.
Yeah, indeed. Although Benzema, of course, has won a lot of Champions Leagues, which Giroud hasn't. But you look at Giroud and it's interesting because he is a bit of a battering ram. A lot of people criticise him. But he never seems to rise to bait, Jules. You know him well. Has he just got really thick skin?
Yes, I think he has thick skin because if you look at his career path, for example, nothing has been easy for him. Again, if you compare them, just for the sake of this incident, Benzema was always that wonder kid from the Lyon Academy who was so good, who made his debut at 17 with the first team, made his Champions League debut at 18, went to Real Madrid at 20. He was always that kind of player. He was amazing from a very young age. Giroud had to work really hard, had to play in the lower leagues, had to go down from the bottom to get to the top when Benzema was always at the top pretty much. So Giroud has a thick skin and I think he rises above those kind of criticism or players saying things about him, and he's never really complained. He knows he's done the best of what he could have done of his career with the talent that he has, and maybe Benzema could have done a bit better, could have been better with France, with the national team. All he had done really is a quarterfinals of the World Cup in 2014 and that's it. So I guess this morning both would be happy. Benzema, I'm sure, is happy with the career he's had at Real Madrid. Giroud is happy with the career he had overall, but especially with the national team. But again, I think Giroud will look at it and think, like, I don't think that was necessary.
Giroud's got the better beard, hasn't he, Jules?
He's got a better looks, for sure.
I knew that would stump you. Thank you very much, Jules. The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available to download now, by the way, over on the website. Italian newspapers dominated by the news that Juventus players and Sarri won't be paid for 4 months. This will save the club 90 million euros. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, can you give us some more details on this?
Yeah, so look, this isn't something Juventus decided unilaterally. They negotiated with their sort of senior leadership group among the players, including Giorgio Chiellini, Gigi Buffon, Bonucci. I'd be shocked if they didn't ask Ronaldo as well. And basically, they said, can we work out a wage reduction here? Now, you're right in the sense that they won't be receiving their salary. They won't be receiving 4 months' worth of salaries through June 30th. Essentially, they're not getting paid again this season. However, 2.5 of those 4 months, they will be getting them next season in 2020-21. So from Juventus' perspective, it's also a way of this 90 million that they're saving is 90 million in costs, which won't go on their accounts, won't be on their books for the 2019-2020 season, which obviously also has financial fair play implications. They are on the hook for about 60 million of that next season. And of course, you have said, if we start playing again, we're going to, you know, and the money does come in, we're going to renegotiate in good faith. So I think it was an important sign from the players, but equally it's something that, you know, Juventus have decided that, you know, might work to their advantage down the road in deferring these payments. Although it's got to be said, you know, that's an extra 60 million that's going to be on their wage bill next season.
Meanwhile, of course, there's no football in Italy, neither in all the big leagues around the world. Yet there seems to still be some action in Belarus. The Minsk derby this weekend draw more attention than I'm sure it ever has. How come they're still playing there, Gab?
It's a good question, because especially since literally all their neighbors, including Russia, who, you know, they take a lot of their cues from, they've just gone in total lockdown, not just suspending football. Lukashenko, the country's leader, has come out, and he's been pretty clear about this. He thinks that the risks are minimal. He thinks that the colder climate would limit the spread of COVID-19. The crowds aren't huge at these games, and in fact, what's been happening is that, because I think a lot of people are voluntarily staying home and not going to games, people are more spread out. He's also come out and said, well, you know, a bit of sauna, a bit of vodka, a bit of vigorous exercise. He himself played plays hockey in his spare time. You know, all these things will keep you healthy. And this has just been his approach. And, you know, since he's pretty much the sole ruler of the country, what he says goes.
Gab Marconi, thank you very much. Now, for more on football in Belarus, check out the latest article from Arta Petrosian over on the website. The independent newspaper in England today leading with a big story regarding how the Premier League are looking to conclude this season. Now, basically, it's going to be almost like a World Cup. So you have isolated camps in the Midlands and in London. Now, there will be a handful of games. Now, they're going to be played every single day over June and July. All 92 of these matches will be televised. The club and staff will be confined to separate hotels away from their families. Julien Laurent joins us once again. Jules, could this actually happen?
Personally, I don't think it's realistic at all and it's feasible at all. But it's one of the possibilities, one of the ways of finishing the season that Premier League clubs, the Premier League have looked into. This is part of the process. People have to understand that every time people speak, every time they all meet and there's another meeting over the phone on Friday morning with all the Premier League clubs and the people at the Premier League, they go through those options, those possibilities. Oh, could we do this? I mean, if you've got an idea, please send it in to the Premier League. Even if you want to, you think it's a good idea to play in Mars, where there's no virus, there's nothing, and they can all go there, and great. And they will look into it. That doesn't mean that it will happen, that they will prepare for it, but they're ready to listen to anything. It's literally that bad, that they're ready to listen to any options, any plan, any dates, any locations, any structure to it, everything they're ready to consider and to contemplate. And that's one of it. Clearly, some clubs like the idea of having that sort of World Cup super camp format, if you want, with isolation and all of that. But again, I don't think it's very feasible if you just think about the logistic to bring around 1,500 or 2,000 people in the same place, in the same area, even if it's like all healthy and sterilized and everything you want disinfected and all of that. I don't think it could work, but that's one of the options they have. And I'm sure on Friday morning, when they speak again, they will have other ideas. Each club work on certain things, the Premier League as well. And I guess they have to. They have to be ready to anything, depending on the date that we will be able to play football again. But this one, I'm not so convinced by it at all.
Julien, Ron, thank you very much. Just a reminder, we'll be back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Hercules Gomez has actually done something good. Last week, he did that long chat with DeMarcus Beasley. This week, he sits down and talks to Tyler Adams. Great thing about this, in-depth, very, very interesting. Here's a clip about him talking about Timo Werner.
It's hard to say one thing. You know, people are often focused on, obviously, not just on his goal-scoring ability, but how fast he is. He's absolutely rapid. But that's not one of the qualities that I would say sticks out the most. I'd say one of the qualities that sticks out the most is how many ways he's able to score it, from the right, the left, centrally. We've played him as a number 10 this year, and he's running out of the midfield and scoring goals. There's just so many different dynamics that you can fit him in, and that's what makes him such a unique piece. I mean, if you're able to score it in that many different ways, you're going to be able to play at the highest level for a really long time, the biggest clubs in the world, for the national team scoring goals. But he's a pleasure to play with. Obviously, it makes it easy as a midfielder when you can just hit the ball over the top and know that he's going to catch it no matter what. So, yeah, he's a great guy and a great player.
Hercules Gomez with us now. Herc, you must love doing this because you actually have time.
You would think so. Actually, the best thing is they can't tell me they don't have time. I mean, what else are you doing? It's been a lot of fun, and I've been really impressed with not only DeMarcus, but Tyler Adams and the maturity he's shown throughout this whole process.
Herc, what else stood out for you with that interview with Tyler?
Well, his maturity, I mean, he wants to be the U.S. men's national team captain. He says it's no secret. He wants that title. He spoke about having the World Cup in their backyard 2026 and making an actual run. And then the prospect about getting players like himself, like Weston McKennie, Christian Pulisic, and Gio Reyna on the field for the U.S. men's national team healthy. He really thinks they haven't played a lot together, and he thinks people, especially the fans and this negative kind of vibe that's going around the U.S. men's national team, that will dissipate when they all get on the field together and really show what they're about.
Meanwhile, anyone who follows you on social media knows that you've been going down memory lane. In fact, you retweeted someone who found an old action figure of you, Herc. kind of a Superman-esque, Clark Kent, and then ripping off the suit and LA Galaxy uniform underneath. Why on earth did they choose you to be the epitome of Superman?
Well, because that season, I started playing in June, July, half the season, and we ended up winning the double, and I was a big part of that. I scored like 20-something goals in both seasons. I was a developmental player. I was making about $1,200 to live in Los Angeles. They had to at least give me an action figure, but it was a lot of fun, man.
And also, you tweeted a clip of you playing against Real Madrid, LA Galaxy, in a preseason friendly. What was on the back of your shirt, huh?
Hercules.
Shouldn't it be Gomez?
I've had Gomez as well. I've had teams where they use Gomez. I've had teams where they use Hercules. Why is it okay for a Brazilian and not okay for me to use it, Dan? Come on.
Well, because you're hurt.
Wouldn't you have Daniel on yours?
No, I would never have Daniel. I would have Thomas all
what
the
does
way.
That mean?
I've got no pretension like you clearly have.
What's a better marketing tool, Gomez or Hercules?
Marketing? Who's burned your shirt?
Plenty of people and plenty of sponsors. I was making $1,200 a month. Let me do what I need to do to survive.
Hercules Gomez, thank you very much. As always, be sure to check out that interview with Tyler Adams. By the way, also on the website as well, Noe Davis has put out his very early predictions for the 23 who will represent U.S. soccer at Qatar 2022.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility. Napa
know-how. Father's Day knickknacks, that funny mug, ironic tie, or worse, IOU coupon books. It's time to get yourself something you want, Dad, like a Craftsman half-inch corded impact wrench for $99.99. It's the perfect gift to give to yourself. And while you're here, don't forget to shop all our great deals on Craftsman tools. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Offer ends 6/30/20.
The biggest influencer of them all is now on Instagram, Ian Dark, signing up. Be sure to follow him. He's been brilliant, by the way, over the last couple of weeks. Check out his videos. Genuinely hilarious. Maybe not the same skill set as Mr. Dark, but Kun Aguero showing off some of the skills, actually mostly from his dog. More impressive than the Manchester City striker trying to keep fit during this time at home. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for everyone who's been on. Be sure to stay tuned, though, for extra time. Gab Marcotti with me. It was supposed to be Shagger Hislop, when in fact it will be somebody else from the Golf Car Park. Stay tuned. Well, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets. Gab Marcotti is here. Originally, it was going to be Shagger Hislop. His internet is terrible, though. So we thought on the off chance we'd call Craig. And would you believe it? He answered and he agreed to do it as well. What in the moment? Craig, where are you, though, first?
I'm sitting in, well, I'm in my car because this is a steering wheel. You can't see it. I know you can't see it. But I'm sat in the golf club car park because I did, as you know, we did the show a little bit earlier, hence the way I'm dressed with the golf top on, by the way. We did the show a little bit earlier and I thought I would nip out for a cheeky 9 holes. Now, I've just seen Steve Nicol walking past. Well, I think it was him, or otherwise it might have been somebody that was sleeping rough the last couple of nights. I don't know, the dress sense is not too much different, but I think it was Nicol that walked past. So he's my playing partner. We're waiting in Ali Moreno. I'm at the golf club car park in my car.
Okay, let's get on with this then, shall we? Craig, your thoughts on the possibility of Premier League games being played in a centralised location?
No, I don't foresee how that's going to make a huge deal of difference. To be honest, I think there's either safety issues or there's not. There still has to be gatherings of a lot of people. So I think it's either safe to go ahead or it's not.
Gab, what do you think?
Sorry, Rez, I wrote about this in Musings today. I'm in two minds about it. I think the biggest concern is that And I think a lot's going to depend on the conditions around us. But if you have to sequester these players, and the way they made it seem was, well, everybody's going to be tested before they go in, and obviously it's not just going to be footballers, it's going to be camera crews and referees and producers and broadcast crews who can show the game, maybe media as well, medical staff. If your thinking is, oh, all these people will get tested, they'll all test negative, and then they'll all be inside this magical quarantine bubble for 6 to 8 weeks. Now, Dan, you and I have been enough around ex-footballers, let alone when they were young footballers in the early 20s. You just know it's not going to work. They're not going to observe the quarantine. Nobody, not only did they not sign up to basically be sequestered away in prison-like conditions for 6 to 8 weeks without seeing their partners, their families, their wives, whatever, but they're stuck there with a bunch of dudes in a hotel 24 hours a day. You know what's going to happen is people are going to sneak out, because that is what footballers do. That's what most people do. And then all of a sudden, you could potentially have a much worse situation on your hands. That is the health side of it. The other thing is simply, like I said, these guys signed a contract to play football. They signed a contract to train, to travel compatible with that, to play once or twice a week. Nobody signed up to go and be in some kind of prison camp for 2 months. What, just so like the TV companies can show games? No.
Will Harry Kane go to Real Madrid or Barcelona?
How about he stays at Spurs, Dan? Huh? How about that? Why he gotta leave? Why? I know, like, he's been out of the limelight.
Because he wants to win things?
But, like, the way I saw it, well, first of all, I apply, and I know Stevie disagrees with this, I apply the Letizia Totti principle, which is that winning a title at a certain type of club is worth 10 times as much as doing it at Manchester United, back in the good old days anyway, or Real Madrid, or Barcelona, or Juventus. Right, that's the reality. The guy's a Spurs fan. He's been loyal to Spurs. I know what he came out and he said, and he's like, look, you know, if I don't feel we're going in the right direction, maybe one day I'll leave. Doesn't mean I mean the club. I love the club any less. But come on. Let's stop trying to create something that's not there. He's not going anywhere anytime soon, because goodness knows when the transfer window is going to reopen. Nobody's talking about this. All it is Harry Kane being very, very honest. And frankly, I appreciate that, because in a world of, I'm going to go Holden Caulfield on you now, in a world of phonies, he is somebody who, at least on this occasion, is just incredibly honest. And I appreciate that.
Craig, what's your favourite Champions League? What's your favourite Champions League goal of all time?
let me just go back slightly and say I am also very honest, and I've never ever snuck out a hotel like Gab mentions. Although I have seen others do it, but I never have done it. I don't know. The answer to your question is I don't know. My memory's not very good with stuff like that. I suppose the one that springs to mind recently is the. Was it last year, the Ronaldo volley? But I'm sure there are many others. But we see so much. I can't remember all the great goals. But that one, that volley last year, I think it was, or was it the year before? Just sticks in the mind.
Craig, who is your favourite striker to watch all time?
Gab shaking his head. I can see him. I must have answered this question. Wrongly. Graziani.
And you, Gab?
He did say Graziani, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I was joking.
Well, no, the reason why this is neat is we're going to turn... So Graziani is a rare Fiorentina reference. I mean, he played for other clubs as well, but... I go back to the favorite goal thing, and I'm going to make a Fiorentina reference and go old school to the mid-90s. Mauro Bressan from Fiorentina scored one of those unbelievable volleys that whenever people do their Champions League highlight compilations, it's always the one in there by the guy that you've never heard of or had forgotten about. Mauro Bressan was a very average defensive midfielder, and he scored the goal of a lifetime. Check it out, Bressan, B-R-E-S-S-A-N, and you can watch it over and over again.
Meanwhile, of course, Shaka's supposed to be on. A lot of people tweeting about his failure in yesterday's quiz. In case you missed it, here's a clip.
Romelu Lukaku signed for Inter Milan this summer, but which club was the first of his professional career?
Oh, I was Anderlecht.
Yes!
Hey!
Shaka, more surprised than anyone, they actually got an answer right. So be sure to check that out. That's over here on our YouTube channel. Craig, would you be up for doing a quiz?
Yeah, tomorrow. Give me a bit more notice. Obviously, when I'm not in the car, just about to go and play golf. So, yeah, give me a bit.
Meanwhile, Gab, it's supposed to be you and Jules on Thursday. I think they're going to record it, but you're backing. You're not going to do it. I heard you were scared.
I'm not scared. I simply haven't answered yet. I received several emails.
Julien Laurent said you were hesitant because you kept forgetting things.
No. Listen. That's not true. Jules already replied on my behalf. You know, we're a unit. We're like a married couple. We're a domestic partnership at this point via the podcast. So I really have no choice. I have to say that Jules is a bit of a nerd when it comes to these things, and he goes and he swats up on everything, so I don't think I'll do particularly well, because, let's face it, I've seen more football than he has, and so I've forgotten more stuff.
Growing up, Craig, which footballer did you want to be?
I've got to stop you there. I've just seen Ali Moreno walking past. You know, I said to you, Stevie's not dressed too well. I've just seen Moreno walking past, and he's got an aluminous jacket on. I think he's been out working on the roads trying to earn some extra money at the moment. But what the hell? I tell you what, it's worse than the headphones that he's been wearing for this show. A yellow bright jersey he's just put. Oh my God, how's he been let out the house with that on? Good grief. Somebody wants to have a word with his missus. What was the question? Growing up, which footballer did you want to be? Oh, I can see it. I can see it on the screen. Do you know, a footballer that I admired as a youngster was somebody that I got the chance to actually work under. Not that I wanted to be him, but Glenn Hoddle was, in the 80s, was such a graceful player that I kind of always, you know, whenever you saw any clips, you saw a lot of what Glenn could do technically. And my battery's gone. Oops, one sec. And I got the chance to play with Glenn and work under him, and he was always somebody that I kind of looked up to as a player.
Last couple of questions. They're both for Shaka, so you can answer them on his behalf, Craig. If Shaka never became a goalie, would he have been a fox in the box like Ruud van Nistelrooy, or more like a Swiss Army knife like Thierry Henry?
If Shaka were a fox in the box like Ruud van Nistelrooy, a Swiss Army knife like Thierry Henry, he would have been... Think about the laziest striker you could find. Maybe Gab knows one that would be described as a lazy, lazy striker. That would have been his love. That would have been Shaq. He would have done as little as possible and wanted to have taken all the glory. That's what I would say.
Gab, the laziest striker that you know or have known?
Laziest striker, like... doesn't put himself about at all. I mean, there is sort of the stereotype of the aging guy who just kind of walks around, demands the ball. I'll give you a guy who's not aging, who's actually quite young, and scores a ton of goals, and is in many ways like that at a young age, and that's Mauro Icardi. Phenomenal striker, scores a lot of goals, needs a ton of service, but especially when you watch him in person, you kind of realize that he's just not one of those movement or pressing oriented guys at all. He doesn't sit there hands on hips, doesn't quite do that yet, but he kind of behaves the way you expect your 35-year-old multiple Ballon d'Or winning striker to act, and he hasn't done any of that. So I think Icardi's definitely somebody who stands out, at least among the elite.
That's it then. We're done. Craig, thank you very much. Golf.
Hey, I went and got my golf hat on as well. It's like a fashion show. It's like, you know, it's absolutely marvelous. I know you can't see it, but I've got this most fantastic golf hat now, and we're ready to go. I've got two guys. I can see them about 200 yards away on the practice range. There's Ali Moreno with the jacket that's luminous. Where the hell he's got that, I don't know. And next to him, got a man wearing very baggy trousers, a scruffy old hat, a woolen jumper that you would cut your hand on if you rubbed against it, and they're ready to go golfing. Yes, that's Steve Nichol and Ali Moreno, and this is me, your friendly pundit from the car park. I'll do it. Just phone up and ask, and I'll do the show. We can do it from the car, we can do it from the house, we can do it from the golf course. It's up to you. You make the call, I'll do the show. Can I go now?
Well, well, well. What happened to you this weekend? Craig Burley, thank you very much. Thanks to Gav Marcotti as well. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Who knows where Craig will be joining us from?